So after a little break, we're going to continue our study of Malachim Aleph, and we are in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yod Daled. Really kind of like smack in the middle of the construction plans and all of the enhancements that Shlomo made when he was constructing the first Beis HaMikdash. The Perek is going to close by telling us that this was a multi-year project. It's actually going to count out the years and months. And we're kind of hearing it, you know, the plan unfolding. But it took, each of these things took a lot of time. And as we saw before, there seem to be closing phrases. When it finishes to talk about a certain aspect of the building, you'll have a phrase like, Vayiven, or Vayiven, Vayichaleu. He built and he finished. We're not talking about actual finishing. But we're talking about steps along the way. And up until this point, we basically discussed the outer structure. And here, we're starting to discuss what was going on the inside of the Beis HaMikdash walls. So Pasuk Yud Daled. Vayiven Shlomo as Habayis. Shlomo built the Bayis. He built the temple. Vayichalehu, and he finished it. This is kind of finishing the outside and now focusing onto the inside, as the Radak says. Pasuk Tazvav. Vayiven eskiros habayis mibaisa, and he built the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Mibaisa means like mibayis, from the inside. Bitzalos arazim. So they were stone walls, and he put on top of the stone walls and somehow attached to the stone walls cedar boards. Tzalea is a board of arazim, which we had already seen as one of the main items of the main materials that Shlomo needed to coming from the north, that he worked out the treaty with Hiram, the king of the north, was to get arazim. Mikarka habayis ad kiros hasipun, tzipa eitz mibayis, from the floor of the Beis HaMikdash until the beams of the ceiling, same word we saw last time. The Mitzvah defines Sifon means Tikra or ceiling. Tzipa Eitz, he covered it in wool mibayis. And we're going to see that there was a no pun intended, a multi-layered plan that Shlomo wanted gold. He wanted everything to be gold inside the Beis HaMikdash, and he wanted everything to be layered in gold. I'm not a builder. You can't put gold directly onto stone. It's not going to stick. It's not going to fit. And we're going to see there are going to be elaborate designs that the wood would allow for, that stone perhaps would not allow for so easily. So the wood layer is really there in order to hopefully soon, as we'll discuss, support a gold layer. So this, the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, so here we're talking about the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The inside walls were all covered with our erez, cedar wood. Vayitzaf es karka habayis, the stone floor is now being covered bitzalos viroshim, with boards that are made out of cypress wood. What's the difference between cedar wood and cypress wood? So it's possible that cypress wood is a little stronger, it's a little more firm, and therefore it's going to get a lot more of the wear and tear, because the Kohanim are going to be constantly walking on the floor, so you want to use a stronger wood. I haven't built a home, but I imagine the same kind of logic is, what type of wood is used for a floor versus what type of wood could be used for paneling? It's not so popular, man, in these days, but like wood paneling used to be popular in people's mm-hmm. basements. Okay, so if it's on the wall, you don't need it to be as strong of a wood. and so that's why they're different type. Perhaps that's why they're different types of wood.
Yeah, barbed is the same cushion.
It's harder. It's harsher. It's a tougher wood, so it'll be able to take the brunt of all those kohanim.
Question.
Yeah.
You said Shlomo wanted to do the gold. Wasn't he given the plans, or?
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
That was in the plan.
Part of the plans is that for there to be gold. And again, gold is always, it's always the classic question why gold plays such a role in the Mishkan, specifically the Mishkan, which was there to bring a kapara, to bring a sense of atonement for the Chet HaEgel, at least according to one school of thought, right? Let's say Rashi's school of thought, even though we were given the commandment of Truma and Tetzava before Parshas Kisisa, really the Torah goes out of order, and really the command to build the Mishkan was really a type of rectification of the sin of the golden calf. And so you kind of left scratching your head, why is there so much gold? In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Aron is a gold box inside of a wood box inside of a gold box. So why would gold play such a role in a place that you're trying to, it was the very golden, right? You call it the Egel Hazav. So that there's definitely discussion. And in the end, I mean, I've seen answers, but in the end, it's Gezeiras HaKasav. In the end, that's the way God told us to do it, and that's the way we have to do it. And even though, you know, in the construction of the Mishkan, I think many ask questions, you know, what's the role of the Kruvim? These images that are on top of the Aron, where we have countless psukim warning against idolatry and images and making images, and yet here we're told to make images. That's going to be basically like magnified on steroids when you see what Shlomo builds inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So again, you have to, the tradition is that Shlomo received the plans. David got them from a Navi. There was a Navi involved the whole way through. And this, everything is not, so if I said Shlomo wanted, it's all the divine plan. And Shlomo's just putting it into place. Pasuk Tes Zion. Vayiven es Esrim Amo, and he built, in regard to the 20 Amos, Miyarkase Habayis Bitzalos Arazim, from the back of the bayis, with boards of cedar, Minakarkar Akiros, from the ground until the beams, Vayiven lo Mibayis Ledvir Lekodesh HaKadoshim. And he built this area, Mibayis Ledvir, from the Heichal, from the bayis Ledvir, to the Dvir, which we could translate in one of two ways, which I'll explain, Lekodesh HaKadoshim, for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So he's talking specifically, right, we're having a pasuk specifically talk to us about the fact that in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we already saw, we already had the measurements, was 20 Amos by 20 Amos. So in this area, he has all of the walls from the floor into to the ceiling are covered with these cedar walls. The two ways to explain the Dvir, either the Dvir is a name for, as we saw before, the Dvir could be a name for the Kodesh HaKadoshim as a whole, and the Dvir could also be a reference to the what existed in the Mishkan as a parochas that separated the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that we're going to see in the Beis HaMikdash, there was actually, instead of a parochas being cloth, the paroch, the separation between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was going to, in addition to cloth, it was going to actually involve doors, hinges, and things of that nature. So one pasuk is telling us about the Kodesh, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Yud Zayin, Va'arbaim Ba'ama Hoya HaBayis, and the 40 Amos was the Bayis, was the temple. That's a reference to the Kodesh. That's a reference to the first section, which we already saw. Hu HaHechal Lefanai, this was the Hechal in the front. Meaning, in the front means that when a Kohen and the Kohen Gadol would enter the actual Beis HaMikdash, right? We usually colloquially, we say the Beis HaMikdash, we refer to the whole structure. The whole entire thing is the Beis HaMikdash. The Heichal itself, the sanctuary itself, that was, right, we talked about the very big hallway, the Ulam, which was this like elaborate, extremely tall entranceway into the actual Heichal, into the temple. And then we have the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Kodesh was 40 Amos. Lefanai, it's before, meaning you would walk from east to west. You would walk into the Kodesh. That's the room that had the Mizbeach HaZahav for the Ketores. It had the Menorah. It had the Shulchan. Then you would the Kohen Gadol would continue walking in that east to west direction and get to the, after 40 Amos of Kodesh, would get to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The fact that the Heichal is described with the word Lefanai, so the Medrash says the word Lefanai is close to the word Lefanos. That it's in terms of the Heichal, the word Lefanos means to turn, to poneh. The wherever a Jew is in the world, so we know a Jew is supposed to face the temple. We live to the west of Eretz Yisrael, so that's why we always focus on Mizrach. And even in Europe, even though Europe is more north, the main direction towards Eretz Yisrael is considered to be Mizrach. That's why we all have Mizrach. But if you were in the south of Israel, you daven towards the north. If you were directly north, you daven south. And obviously, if you were east, you would face west. You're always facing, and so word lefanos means to kind of turn towards, just as an additional level of meaning. Pasuk Yirches. The Erez El Habayis Penima, this cedar, which was on the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, Miklas Pekaim. Miklas Pekaim, so the word aklia could be a type of braid. And the Mitzvah Sion says we should understand it as decorating. Pekaim are images, perhaps even of... The Mitzvah Sion gives an example of a fruit, and then it says upiturei tzitzim, piturei tzitzim, blossoming flowers. There were different types of designs that were able to be etched into the wood. Once you had, right, this would have been extremely hard to etch into the stone. Not to mention the idea that we already mentioned that they weren't supposed to be using metal tools to accomplish metal tools against the stone. But here when it comes to the wood, so they were able to form, so truth is I don't know how it was formed. They could have taken these boards, made the designs before they attached the wood to the stone, or it was after, it doesn't seem to say. Hakol Erez, everything was made out of this cedar wood. Ein Evan Nira. And this beautiful stone structure in terms of the inside, from the outside, it looked like stone. Although at least part of it, we said we wouldn't even be able to see part of the walls from the outside because it was covered by the yitzia, the storage offices that kind of went around the back of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the walls from the outside were stone, but on the inside you weren't supposed to see the stone at all. It was all covered in wood, and the wood lent itself to these beautiful designs, which we're going to see. Basically, you're going to be sprinkled around the entire Kodesh, and even Kodesh HaKadosh, and these beautiful designs of into the wood. I saw I don't know where this mechitza was, but the mechitza was made out of, looked like a brass, and it was all shapes of the Shiva Saminim. So instead of looking out of like bars or whatever, but it was all shaped like a Shiva Saminim. So I don't know if they had intentions, but it, you know, in terms of flowers and fruit, that actually has a source. Mm-hmm. It has a source in the first base to make this. It's not foreign to a shul, which we refer to as a mikdash ma'at. Pasuk Yutes, udvir besoch habayis mipnima hechin. The dvir, which might be referring to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, this is besocha bayis, it's on the inside, mipnima, towards further in, heichin was fully prepared, l'sitein sham aron bris Hashem. The goal of preparing it, and maybe the idea that you're preparing it means that there is going to be an extra level of sanctity to the Kodesh HaKadoshim due to the fact that the aron bris Hashem was going to come to rest there. The Aron Bris Hashem was already located in Yerushalayim. And Sefer Shmuel, it was discussed how the Aron was in a war with the Plishtim, the Aron was captured, and the Aron was taken, was brought, after 7 months of being in the Plishti land, was brought back. It found a home for itself in Kiryas Ya'arim, which is very close to Telstone today, about 15 minutes outside of Yerushalayim. It stayed there for 20 years, and then David made the decision to bring the Aron, and just the Aron, to Yerushalayim, and it had a tent. The Aron was basically in a special ohel, a special tent. But the Kodesh HaKadoshim would be the home, the permanent home for the Aron. Chazal very much pick up on the word hechin, preparation, because preparation seems to imply thinking about the future. So the the Gemara tells us, the Radak mentions it here, that when Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, he had nevuah, he had prophecy, and he foresaw that the first Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. It's going to be destroyed by enemies, right, the Babylonians, and he was nervous about the Aron. And so he built for the Aron a secret chamber underneath, within the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash. He built a chamber that in the future, if you stick with the program, Yoshiyahu HaMelech tore away towards, like, hold this much. And at that point of the book, Yoshiyahu saw that Churban was coming. And, you know, a few decades before the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed, he made the executive decision as king to hide the Aron in the chamber that Shlomo HaMelech built for the Aron. And according to our tradition, that's where the Aron still is today, right? Indiana Jones aside. I think I mentioned it in this year about Gulliver's Gate in Manhattan. Did I do that?
Yes.
Yeah. So in Gulliver's Gate, which is like mini the world, they have what seems to be a window into Shlomo's secret chamber. What's fascinating is that, okay, so here we're learning a beautiful pasuk in Tanakh with the Radak citing us the Gemara. The Rambam in the fourth parak of Hilchos Beis HaBechira and the laws of building the Beis HaMikdash, so the Rambam writes that, right, here's the Rambam. The Rambam writes, Evan Hoysa Bekodesh HaKadoshim. There was a stone in the Holy of Holies, B'maravo, in the west of it, towards the west. The Aleha Haya Aron Muneach Ulefanov Tzantzenes Haman Umata Aron. That's where the Aron was placed during the first Beis HaMikdash, along with the jar of man that they saved from the desert, the Mata Aron, the staff of Aron that sprouted the almond flowers to show after the whole debacle with Korach to show that Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol. Fine. Now remember, we're reading the Rambam's halacha work. We're not reading this is not philosophy, this is not history, this is halacha. Uve'esha bana Shlomo es habayis, at the time that Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, v'yadash es sofo licharev, he knew that in the end it would be destroyed, bana makom lignoz bo ha'aron, he built a place to hide the Aron, lamata, below, bimatmonios amukos, the alkalkalos, in like the deeps and depths of the foundation, v'yoshiyahu HaMelech, and it was King Yoshiyahu, tziva v'gonzu b'malkom shabana Shlomo, commanded that it should be hidden there. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was puzzled, I imagine others as well, why would the Rambam, who's writing a halacha work, why would he need to incorporate this idea, this historical idea, that Shlomo hid the Aron? So he wanted to give an explanation that where did the Kedusha for the Beis HaMikdash come from? Where does any sanctity to the shul come from? So we know the sanctity for the shul comes from, a lot of it has to do with the Aron. The holiest thing in a shul is the Aron, which houses the Torahs. So it's the written word of God that gives sanctity to something, right? When you have an item of, there are two types of items. There's something called, in terms of doing mitzvahs, there's something called tashmishe mitzvah, things that we use to do a mitzvah, and there's tashmishe kedusha, things that are holy. So things that you use for a mitzvah, let's say a lulav, once you finish with your lulav, it's not, once sukkah is over, it's not a lulav anymore. I mean, it's still a lulav, but it does not have significance. Halachically, we're supposed to have sensitivity. You're not supposed to throw it out in the garbage with your chicken bones. You're supposed to, you could wrap it, you could save it and burn it with your chametz if you want. Some people do that. But you wrap it in a plastic and you can put it out for the trash. Same thing. Let's say your sukkah. You build a sukkah and you're moving. So you're getting rid of, or you're updating your sukkah. So what do you do with the old sukkah walls? So during sukkahs, it sounds ridiculous to say such a thing. During sukkahs, if you wanted to make a fire and you were out of firewood, you had a sukkah that made out of four walls and you're big tamachachem, so you know that your a sukkah is kosher with three walls. So you want to take one of the walls down and use it as firewood. So during sukkahs, you're not allowed to do that. It's reserved for the mitzvah. But after sukkahs, tashmishe mitzvah, you can go ahead and get rid of it. And again, in a respectful way. Tashmishe kedusha, which are all things that the wonderful committee that helped us downstairs with the Shemus, people know there's certain things have to go into Shemus, right? If it's a mezuzah, tefillin, the common thing, and anything that helped the tefillin bag and the tefillin, the box that covered it, anything that was used to support Kedusha, and Kedusha means the written word of Hashem, that attains sanctity, that has to be buried, that has to be treated with an extra layer of respect. So where did the sanctity come from the Beis HaMikdash? It came from the Aron. Shlomo was worried the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Where is the sanctity going to be for the second Beis HaMikdash? What happens if the enemies take the items of the Beis HaMikdash and we don't get it back? And you could probably say, to a certain extent, we know a little bit more about what was taken in the second Beis HaMikdash. It seems that many items were taken by the Romans, and we haven't gotten them back. You know, what is where? And right, you could write Rabbi Blech, I think he has a whole book about this. About, you know, but the Arch of Titus has a picture. Okay, what it is exactly, that you can do the research yourself. So Shlomo was worried, where's the sanctity going to come from? So the answer is that Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, that's why the Rambam incorporates it. The answer is the sanctity came from the exact same source. The Aron never left. The Aron is still there. According to our tradition, it's still there. And that allowed for, when they came back and they rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash on the same exact spot, that allowed for the Kedusha of the second Beis HaMikdash to be there. And so this idea, which is all hinged on the word Heichin, that Shlomo HaMelech threw, and this might not have been in the, right, it seems to be explained, that this was Shlomo in his Nevuah, he foresaw this was going to happen, and he went ahead and put into place that the Aron could be hidden. As far as I know, no one's ever even come close to finding it. And from what I've been told, I think we, meaning the Jewish community, has much more of an interest in the entire archaeology department or focus on Har HaBayis than our neighbors in that region do. And so there, you know, it's something that I guess we'd all be interested to know where the Aron is. But it's probably a good idea that we don't know at this point where it is, because if you knew where it is, it could be a problem. Who touches it? Who handles it? Right? In the story in Sefer Shmuel, handling the Aron inappropriately is not a good idea. When they say that's why the group of Kahus, the group of Levim who were charged with the Aron, they were the smallest in number, because handling the Aron is not necessarily a skula for Arichas Yamim. Depends who you are. So this is the Dvir. This is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Pasuk Chaf. V'lefnei ha-dvir, esrim ama, orech ve'esrim ama rochav. Before the dvir, here most likely the word dvir is being used as the partition between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is talking about the dimensions again of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Esrim ama orech, esrim ama rochav, the esrim ama komaso, and 20 amos high. Vayitzapehu zahav sagur, it was coated, it was covered, overlaid in zahav sagur. Give me the, anyone have, we all have art scroll translations, okay? Zahav sagur, they translated as fine gold. We have to focus on that term in a minute. Vayitzaf mizbeach arez. He also coated the mizbeach in cedar. A little bit strange that that's thrown into this pasuk, but let's first handle one challenge. This pasuk has a number of challenging things. If you're keeping track of the math, we came up short. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20 by 30. When we first, if you just want to glance back at it for a second, where would this be? Pasuk Beis. Right, if you go back to Perek Vav, Pasuk Beis, Va'abayis Asher Bana HaMelech Shlomo LaHashem, Shishim Ama Orko, the Esrim Ama Rochbo, it was 60 long, 20 wide, Ushloshim Ama Komaso. Shloshim Ama Komaso, 30 Amos tall. We had said that didn't exactly match up with the, right, we said we were trying to maybe double the size of the Mishkan. When it came to the Mishkan was 30 long and 10 wide. This was going to be 60 long and 20 wide. Again, still with the idea that the first two-thirds of it is the Kodesh, and the second third is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But here, in talking about the fact that they overlaid the walls with wood, with these beautiful cedar panels, so it says it's only 20 amos high. So there are many explanations offered in terms of Maybe the designs. We're talking about the wood that had these beautiful designs. Maybe that was only 20 amos high. And the last 10 amos were kind of blank. The other idea is that when we say that the heichal, the bias, was 30 amos high, maybe that was only the kodesh and not the kodesh hakadoshim. Another answer is that between the kodesh and the kodesh hakadoshim, maybe there actually, in terms of the exact partition, maybe there was 10 amos from the ceiling down that was empty space. Why empty space? Because normal all year round the ketores was offered in the first part, in the Kodesh, there's a Mizbeach HaKetores. Once a year, the Ketores is offered in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There was something about the smoke of the incense being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And so if they left a 10 amma space, right, if the wall only went up 20 amos, and then from the wall to the ceiling was another 10 amos of empty space, so then the incense, the Ketores, would be able to flow, the smoke would be able to flow into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So again, a number of reasons. This is the first time that we've heard this phrase of Zahav Sagur. It makes sense that if this is a higher quality of gold, is that this is what you would start using, because we're talking about the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Zahav Sagur, Rashi offers an approach from Chazal. The word Sagur means closed, right? So Rashi has Rashi quotes from a Gemara in Yuma. Why does it mean closed? If one merchant started selling this type of gold, everyone else closed up their shop because no one was going to want anyone else's gold. It was such good quality gold that no one would want to compete. And the other is that the sagur from a language of keeping it closed. That if you got your hands on some of this gold, you would be much more you as a seller would be much more protective, right? There's the, I don't know, right? I imagine, I haven't been to 47th Street in a long time. I imagine, you know, there's the stuff you keep in the front of the store, and then there's the stuff in the back with a safe and an armed guard and, everything. You need a retina scan to get in, everything like that. So that's Zahav Sagur. So again, this is a prime example where the translation is clearly not going literal. It doesn't. The word sagur never means fine, but it refers to qualities that, or at least ways, approaches that you would treat the gold that shows that it's so precious. Why in this pasuk, which is clearly about the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and if you see after the word zahav sagur, we always point out sometimes the cantillation, the trup. Mm-hmm. is an asnachta, which is a semi-pause. It's almost like we've now finished the first clause of the verse. Oh, and by the way, vayitzaf mizbeach ares. And he also coated the mizbeach in ares, ares wood. So he asks the question, which mizbeach are you talking about? So Rashi tells us he's talking about the mizbeach haktores. The Mizbeach HaKetores is the incense Mizbeach, which is in the Kodesh. It would have been way too far of a jump to say that you're talking about the Mizbeach HaChitzon. The outer Mizbeach wasn't even in the what we call the bias. The outer Mizbeach, we call it the outer Mizbeach for a reason. It was out. In the Mishkan, it was out of the tent. Right? The Mishkan is referred to as the Ohel Moed, and the Mizbeach was in the courtyard. Mm-hmm. In the Beis HaMikdash, the same thing. You have this bias, you have the Heichal, you have this house, temple, and the Beis HaMikdash, the Mizbeach that was for Karbanos, sometimes referred to as the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the copper Mizbeach. So it would have been a really far jump to say we're talking about that Mizbeach. So Rashi tells us we're talking about the Mizbeach HaKetores, and Rashi says, right, a beautiful thing to see, Rashi says, Utmiya ani, I'm so bewildered and bewondered, Vishal Moshe lama nignas. Where's the one that Moshe Rabbeinu built? Moshe Rabbeinu built one out of gold. Where's that Mizbeach? Why did Shlomo get rid of that Mizbeach? Lama Nignaz, why did he put that into Geniza and build his own Mizbeach? So Rashi kind of leaves it as a question. Other Rishonim understand that perhaps what Shlomo did is he enlarged the Mizbeach that Moshe Rabbeinu built. That kind of following what we've been saying, that many of the, at least a few noticeable dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash are double that of the Mishkan. So Shlomo had this idea to double the size of the Mizbeach. How you would do that, I really don't know. From an engineering perspective, the Mizbeach had dimensions, and was it that he built it around it, but then the walls, I don't know if I'm being clear, but if you have a solid, this is not going to be good at all, but if you have a solid piece, and you're just trying to, it already had walls on four sides, it was like a square shape up, how would you enlarge, and it's made out of gold, how would you enlarge it with wood? Do you understand my question? I'm not asking you to have an answer. But there's some way to make it larger, and why it's being thrown into this pasuk, I don't necessarily have an answer to. The other approach is that historically we don't have facts for this, but we do know, and we mentioned it a little bit before, when Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, and or at least the city of Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim, and the Mishkan ceased to function. We lost the Aron, that's clear. It could very well be that maybe some of the other Kalim were damaged or taken, and maybe there was a need. Maybe there was a makeshift Mizbeach HaKetores might have been built at the time that they wanted the Mishkan to function in the city of Nov and in the city of Givon. But now there's opportunity to build a nice new one, meaning Moshe's might not have been available. It might not have been around. But why this is thrown into the pasuk that was talking about putting the gold and the Zav Sagur and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, I leave that question for homework. Pasuk Chaf Aleph.
Wait, so can I just, in general, were these the thing, like the Mizbeachs and the, like the basin and the...
Well, we're going to see, there's going to be an enhancement for that also.
So did they start out as being the ones that were originally made for the Mishkan?
But I mean, that's what we're discussing. Some of them, right. Yeah, some of that. The Aron is clearly the same Aron.
Right.
Okay. The understanding is that the base is that yes, it's the same.
Because they were carrying them around with the poles and all that jazz, right?
Well,
like some of the things. No?
I don't think I've ever heard it discussed as that, but... so the Mishkan hasn't traveled in a very long time.
Right.
The Mishkan, for the first 14 years that they were in
Gilgal,
in Eretz Yisrael, it was in Gilgal. That was like Yoshua's home base.
Right.
As those who are in 929 right now, they know that Gilgal keeps Yeshua's in Gilgal. That was like home base where the Mishkan was. I thought it was. I didn't have time to do research. I was privileged to give the 929 on the last day of Pesach, and there it discussed. It's one pasuk that discusses the Mishkan being set up in Shiloh. I didn't have time to research, and I don't remember all of Yehoshua. It just doesn't seem they don't make such a big deal about it. We make such a big deal about the Mishkan in the desert. We make such a big deal, rightfully so, about the Beis Hamikdash, as we're going to see. Perichet, the whole dedication and things like Klal Yisrael. It makes sense to make a big deal out of setting up Beis HaMikdash. The Mishkan it's in Shiloh for 369 years, which it becomes its permanent home. It's like half a pasuk. So why there isn't more? So then when the Mishkan moves to Shiloh, it's permanent. It's not traveling anymore. Then
but
Shiloh,
it's the same stuff.
It's presumably the same stuff, except the wall. The walls
said,
change.
Right, okay,
the walls change.
Right.
You know what happened to what happened to those walls? They were probably hidden away, and I don't think wood doesn't last as much
right.
as other things in our I don't think we've found the Mishkan yet. How they transported the items from when Shiloh was destroyed, and then they set up in the city called Nov, Ir HaKohanim, not necessarily that they transferred the items in the same way that they traveled in the desert. Just because I imagine, they fell out of practice. Meaning, there was in the desert there was like a set, every Levi had a job, and there was a whole the Kohanim had to take things down and wrap things. If you read this is in where is it at the end of Bamidbar and the beginning of Nusso, they had like this whole elaborate system of how to take it down and wrap it up and carry it. But the presumption is that the vessels are the same unless we hear otherwise. Okay. So here Rashi seems to think this is not the Mizbeach, and he has no idea what Moshe Rabbeinu had a beautiful Mizbeach. Why are they passing up that Mizbeach for something else? Fine. Pasuk Chafalaf. Vayitzav Shlomo as habayis mipnima zahav sagur. So Shlomo coated and overlaid the bayis on the inside with this zahav sagur. Vayaber biratukos zahav lifnei hadvir. There was some type of vayaber. The translation in the art scroll is, and he vayaber biratukos zahav lifnei hadvir. He drew golden chains in front of the partition. The Mitzvah Tzion says vayaber is a word. It's almost, he uses the Targum translation of the word brichim. Brichim is like a pole. This golden chain, right? The ratakut Mitzvah Tzion says shalshalos. Shalshalos is a chain. That where the dvir was, where the partition was going to be between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was going to be a chain that something was going to be hung on. And so he made this elaborate golden chain, vayitzapehu zahav. And then it was made out of gold, and then it was covered with gold. Pasachav beis. V'eskol habayis tzipa zahav. The entire house he coated in gold. So this was already telling us, right, we had heard about the wood, and now we're hearing about the golden layer on top of the wood. Atom kol habayis, till the entire inside of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was covered in gold. The gold would be able, right, you would be able to see all of those beautiful wooden designs that were carved into the wood. So if the gold is thin enough and you plate the gold over the wood, you can still see the beautiful designs, the gold still highlighted that. V'chol ha-mizbeach asher ladvir tzipazav. The entire mizbeach that was in the dvir. So here the dvir can't be referring to the partition, but it's referring to just the heichal. Tzipazav was coated in gold. So that same mizbeach that we read about two psukim ago, the inside mizbeach, the mizbeach haktores, so it was built out of cedar wood, and then it was covered in gold. For the next few psukim, we're going to hear about Shlomo's kruvim. Shlomo's kruvim, right? These psukim are not part of a haftorah. So if you haven't learned malachim before, these kruvim, it's like wild, because you would never, in the pictures of the Beis HaMikdash, they never have these kruvim. And we always think of kruvim, as the little small kruvim that were on top of the aron, that one was a young boy, one was a young girl, and it's like this, like, it's hard to use the word cute because you're talking about the holiest item that we have in our religion, but that's what we're starting, right? Cherubic, angelic. Okay, get ready. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Vayas bedvir shnei kruvim atzei shaman. And he made in the dvir, so here we're talking about the Kodesh HaKadoshim, shnei kruvim, two cherubs, atzei shaman, made out of shaman wood, which most translate as olive wood. Olive wood. The Mitzvah Tzion quotes from the Targum Yonasan, do'ei zesa, zayas, olive wood, which has a little bit of a problem, which we'll discuss in a second. Eser amos komaso, 10 amos tall. Each cherub is 10 amos tall. 10 amos tall, that's the height of the Mishkan. That's, an am is a foot and a half to 2 feet. So you're talking about 15 feet tall are these cherubs. These are no longer cute. Atze shaman, so the Radak is a little perturbed by the term atze shaman, because where are you getting atze shaman from? Where are you getting an olive tree from? Where are you getting olive wood from? So, to have olive wood, you have to cut down an olive tree. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to cut down fruit trees in the land of Israel. So where are you getting olive wood from? So it's possible that you could, if it's an old tree that's no longer producing fruit, so then you can cut it down. And it's also possible that maybe it was not exactly right. It doesn't say Atzei Zayas. It says Atzei Shaman. So it could have well been another type of oil, not necessarily produced from a fruit, but some trees have sap, some trees have some type of byproduct that could be oily, and so it could be Atzei Shaman were not actually fruit trees of olives, but maybe it was a different type.
Could you have gotten the olive wood from the king of, I forgot
who. So I forget the topic well, but I don't think you're supposed to cut down a fruit tree anywhere. If you have a fruit tree that's good and well, if you have one that's dying and going to crash into your house, that's, you know, people have this problem. Different people have different problems with trees. New Rochelle has no shortage of trees, so. And problems from trees.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we actually determined that a tree has to. There's a tree in our yard that has to. They were waiting to see in spring would it come,
yeah.
And there's nothing. So, yeah, the right people are in the know. Yeah. So, but yeah. So we try not to cut down a fruit tree anywhere.
So where's all that olive wood? Like, isn't there like an olive wood factory in Mea Sharim? Or like they sell olive oil? Like, isn't
right? There is a store.
So where do they get all that olive wood?
That's a good question.
Right? You know what I'm talking about?
I gave them out for my bar mitzvah. Yeah. That's what we gave. We gave out table stenders for my bar mitzvah.
Right?
The night before my bar mitzvah, my sister-in-law is like writing all my friends' names. They each got their own table stender. I don't know how many people used it, but my mom came up with that idea. I don't know who she got someone to schlep 30 of them back from Israel. And I think I still have one, maybe. But that's a good question. If it actually is olive wood, where do they get it? And so I guess hopefully it's from old trees.
Do they keep that law still in Israel?
I mean, you got the stores in Mea Sharim, right?
So, right. I know.
They're pretty religious over there. I don't know. But we could make a short bet that the chance of you getting to that store before me, there's probably a better chance that you're going to get there before I do. So now it's
on.
Yeah. Now it's on.
We've got a lot of grass cover in Israel. A lot of field trips in Israel.
It's on you. So we got these kruvim that are olive wood. They're 10 amos tall. Pasuk of Dalet. V'chamesh amos knaf kruv ha'achas. Each wing, they still have wings. They're still that cherubic, angelic figure. 5 amos is one wing. V'chamesh amos knaf ha'kruv ha'shenis. And 5 amos is the second wing. Eser amos miktzos knafav. And it's 10 amos from one end of the wing. Vad kitzos knafav till the other end. So they have this wingspan of 5 amos on one side, 5 amos on the other side, and it goes 10 amos. Pasuk chaf hei. The eser ba'ama kruv hasheni, the other kruv was also 10 amos tall. Mida achas, it was basically one measurement. The ketzev echad, and one set amount. L'shnei kruvim, they were carbon copies of each other. Pasuk chaf vav. Komasa kruv ha'achad eser ba'ama v'chein kruv ha'sheni. Just to make sure you know that it's clear. Each one of them is 10 amos, the other one is the same thing. Pasuk ha'zayin. Vayitin es ha'kruvim besoch ha'bayis ha'pnimi. They're put into the inner part of the bayis. They're put into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Vayifrisu es kamfine ha'kruvim. Their wings were spread out. Vatiga knafa achad bakir u'knafa kruv ha'sheni nogas bakir ha'sheni. They went wing to wing to wing to wing, one touching one wall, and the other touching the other wall. The chanfeim al tocha bayis, their wings went out towards, right, went from west. They're all the way in the back of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, facing east, and their wings protrude going east. Nogas knaf al knaf, the wing is touching each wing. What doesn't seem to be accounted for is the body of this kruv, and where the wing is coming out of, any width of the body. It seems to be that this, so the Mefarshim explained some type of miracle card, in that these two kruvim are taking up the exact space. We said that the inside is 20 amos by 20 amos. So the span is taking up, the span of the wings is taking up the entire 20 amos, and it's not accounting for the width of the kruv, and therefore you have to explain there was some, how did it all fit? You have to explain some type of miracle, which is similar to what ends up being explained in the time that the Mishkan is built. Because we're told that the poles of the Aron were 10 amos, but the Mishkan itself was 10 amos. So how does 10 amos fit exactly into 10 amos? Miracle card.
So couldn't the wings kind of go like this?
Yeah.
So that they're touching each other?
So, but where they're being met, how they're being...
They're coming from the back of the body.
Right, well, where exactly they're being measured from? Maybe. Middle maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing, the middle of the back.
Right.
Right.
Like the wings are touching each other. They're not coming from the sides like a bird. They're coming from the back.
Right. Okay.
So there's no span of body.
That's necessary for the measurement.
Right.
So these wings are, they're hanging over, and basically they're the background to the Aron, being in the, right. And it's also, and it's just having such a large, right? Again, this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Beis HaMikdash, having such a large figure in a religion that puts such a emphasis on, no figures.
Right.
Again, so we have to, you know, this is part of the plan.
Nobody really sees them, but the Kohen Gadol, and I guess the people that made them.
Right. I mean, the Gemara talks about that they used to have. There was some type of way that on Yom Tov, the Jews would be able to somehow see through. That they would open the doors and open the curtains, and the Jews were able to see through. Because the Gemara talks about not about these large kruvim. The Gemara talks about the kruvim on the Aron that. Basically, at a time that the Jews were getting along, or the Jews and Hashem were getting along, the kruvim were embracing. And a time when they weren't, the golden kruvim were obviously with the nace. The gold they were facing away from each other.
Right.
I remember that story.
And they say that even in the towards the end, I guess when it's hard to square away all the statements because of Yoshiyahu. Hid the Aron before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. There's definitely a Maimer Chazal about that before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, at a moment that you would think the Kruvim would be separated, they're actually still together. But it doesn't exactly work with the fact that Yoshiyahu hid the Aron. So maybe you say when Yoshiyahu hid the Aron, it's already, Churban is already kind of coming, and the Kruvim were facing each other. So Klal Yisrael was able to see that. So on Yom Tov, somehow, some way, they were able. You'd have to have really good vision.
So
you know, they weren't staring at screens all day, so they probably had better eyes than
we do.
Yeah, something like that. But again, it was not constant view. But I have never, not that I've seen so many, but I've never seen depictions of these kruvim. Right. Homework again. So the kruvim again were made out of atzei shamen. They made out of some type of, definitely a different type of wood. Most could be olive wood. Pasuk chav ches vayitzaf es kruvim zahav. They're also coated. They're coated in gold.
I just interrupt. You know, it's interesting. Harvard has a museum, like a Semitic museum, and they do have something with these kind of big things there. You know, they have something like a Beis HaMikdash or something. And they do, but they're not,
And it's not attached to the Ark.
No, what's interesting is I think it might have been in front of the Beis HaMikdash. Like to me, I looked at it, I was like, where did they get this from? Like, it's totally wrong.
Meaning outside of the building.
I think it was outside.
Like greeting you on the way in.
Right. Like, I think it was, like, you know, the truth was I just kind of clicked off it because I was like, I didn't remember that. You know what I mean? So,
right.
But they definitely had these two giant kruvim somewhere.
You see them in the Assyrian type of cemeteries.
But I think they had something for the Beit HaMikdash because they had like their depiction.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, so it's interesting. So someone else is reading this.
Okay.
You know?
We have a.
And they did that. Oh,
I don't know where it came from, but the front page of when you open up like the classic type of Gemara, the front page has this like interesting, like almost like a wooden canopy, and it's also greeted by these two lions on the side. I don't know where that. I don't know where that came from. I remember when I was like 3 years old, my brothers were like, they were like 20 years older than me, so they were learning Gemara already. But they would show me the lions. To like, what else would a 3-year-old be interested in? not the black print. Even 13-year-olds aren't always, but okay. That's what I deal with in the morning.
Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So the lions.
The lions.
So fine. So they were also quoted in gold. Fine. Pasuk Chavtes. The Eskol Kiros Habayis Mesav Kala Pituche Meklaos Kruvim Usmiros. We're told that all of the walls of the bayis, they were surrounded with kala. Kala were the designs. Petuche, miklaos, kruvim, usmiros. There were more designs of kruvim. And smiros is like tamar, a date palm. Upiture tzitzim, blossoming flowers. Milafinim v'lachitzon. All throughout the inside and the outside, both in addition to some of the designs we heard before, there were more designs of kruvim and of date trees and of flowers. There was a type of parallel. If you remember from the classic Mishkan book, the different curtains that were had in the Mishkan, some of them, well, at least one of them had design. I think there's a debate whether it was some type of eagle or a lion, or there were different designs in the curtains of the Mishkan, and this is echoed in the walls. Pasuk Lamed, V'yes, right? Because we had said on the inside you weren't going to be able to see any stone. So far we took care of the walls, but what about the floor? V'yes karka habayis tzipa zahav lefnima v'lechitzon. The floor of the Beis HaMikdash was coated in gold, lefnima v'lechitzon, both in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and in the Kodesh. So the Kohanim, when they're walking on this stone covered by wood, covered by gold. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, V'yes Pesach HaDvir, the door of the Dvir, the door between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the opening, Asa Dalsos Atzei Shamen. This is very different than the Mishkan. The Mishkan only had a curtain. And here, again, some type of olive wood or oil wood. We'll just call it olive wood because it's easier. There were doors, actual doors. Ha'ayil, the ayil, which sounds like to be the door frame, mezuzos chamishas, was five doorposts, which makes it sound like there was some type of elaborate doorway that ended in a point, some type of pentagon shape doorway. The Radak doesn't get so elaborate. He says it was a classic, rectangular-shaped doorway, but there were five pieces of wood that went somehow artistically to create this normal-shaped doorway. But the doorway is made with posts, Pasuk Lamed Beis, Ushtei Dalsos Atzei Shomen. There were two doors of olive wood, the Kala Alehem, and they're braided Miklos Kruvim. The wood of the doors have these designs of Kruvim, Usmiros, and the date palms, Upturei Tzitzim, and the flowering buds, whatever, vitzipa zav, and now this wood is coated in gold. Some understand the fact that we mentioned dalsos twice, that there actually were four doors. It was like a double door. Vayered al kruvim al tmiros val zav. This went on top. The gold went onto vayered. The art scroll translates it as pressed. He pressed the gold into the gold was pressed over the shapes of these doors, the kruvim and the date palms. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'chein asa lefesach ha-heichal. Right? So this previous pasuk talked about the doorway between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Mm-hmm. What about from the outside, or what was called the ulam, the hallway, into the Kodesh? There was another doorway. Mezuzas Yishamen, doorposts made out of olive wood. Me'es Revias, this was a classic four-sided door. Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Ushtei dalsos atzei veroshim. These doors were made out of cypress wood, which we had said that was the material of the floor. Shnei tzla'im hadelas ha'achas glilim. There were two rounded hinges for each door. Ushnei kleim hadelas ha'shenis glilim, and two rounded hinges for the second door. Pasuk lamed hei. V'kala kruvim usmiros upturei tzitzim. These doors, again, that went from the outside of the Beis HaMikdash into the Kodesh were also braided, designed with kruvim and date palms and flowers, v'tzipa zav, and then coated in gold. Miyushar ala mechukeh. Miyushar ala mechukeh. Mechukeh is a language of engraving. That it was miyushar, it was straight, it was placed over the graving, so you didn't lose any of the designs, any of the, again, how this would actually come. I don't think anybody does this anymore. Make a design out of wood and then cover it with gold. I don't know, but however it was, you didn't lose. I think the pasuk is going out of its way in its description to say it didn't lose the quality of the design into the wood. The fact that you covered it, in gold. Gold generally is a more of a softer, I think it's a softer metal. So it could be if they did the designs into just the gold, it might not hold up over time. But if it's into the wood with the gold on top, then it would work well. Pasuk
lam, like gold leaf.
Right. That's another picture.
Mm-hmm. Right. It says that's still used for
and
things.
They sell little sheets of gold that you can.
Yeah, they
melt
it, or they bang it in to the wood.
I think in the King Tut exhibit, so you had gold on top of wood.
Ah, so it was done.
Yes.
It's a thing.
It's an artistic thing.
Yeah, even in craft stores nowadays, they sell thin sheets of gold leaf.
And you could put it on.
You could put it on, I guess.
And push it in, right.
Yeah, like it's very fine, very
right.
thin.
And you don't lose the whatever 100%
not.
Whatever exactly. design you had is still
would show through.
Pasuk Lamed Vav. Vayiven, so now we've kind of finished the actual Beis HaMikdash. Vayiven es HaChatzer. The first time we hear about the courtyard. HaChatzer HaPnimis, the inner courtyard. So he built Shlosha Turei Gazis, three columns of Gazis. Gazis is cut stone. The tur kruso sarazim, and one column of cedar, that to make the wall of this the wall that went around, the wall that created the first courtyard, was made of three rows of stone and one row of some type of cedar post.
So that was like in front of the ulam.
That's
in,
right in front. Meaning, if this was the Kodesh and the Kodesh Hakadoshim, and this was the Ulam, which was so large, standing in front of it, so surrounding this, there's a courtyard that went around
right,
this.
Right.
So that courtyard had a wall, and that wall was kind of a four-layered wall, three layers of stone, one layer of cedar wood. And we close the perek, and we close the construction of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, with the timeline, the complete timeline. That Bashana HaRavias, the Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Bashana HaRavias, it was in the fourth year of Shlomo being king, Yusad Beis Hashem, the foundation was set, B'Yerach Ziv, in the month of Ziv, we already said Ziv is Iyar, month that's coming up soon, Pasuk Lamed Ches, Uvashana Ha'achas Esrei, and in the 11th year of Shlomo being king, B'Yerach Bul, in the month of Bul, Hu HaChodesh HaShmini, that's the 8th month, so you went, right, the 2nd month to the 8th month, so 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 7 months and 7 years. Kala HaBayis, then the Bayis was finished, right, V'Yichal Elokim, Kala, finished. L'chol dvarav, according to all of its things, l'chol mishpatav, all of its laws, as we discussed, that Shlomo was following plans that were given by the Navi to David. Vayivneu sheva shanim, he built it in 7 years, so it's obviously rounding it out. It was 7 years and 7 months. In terms of referring to the month, the Chodesh Hashmini, as the month of Bull, so what do we call the 8th month? Close. What do we call the 7th month? All the holidays are in the 7th month, Tishrei. Cheshvan. So why is Cheshvan called Bul? So there are a number of... So Cheshvan, we call it Mar Cheshvan, is a Babylonian name. All of the months that we have, it's rather odd. We refer to all the months by Babylonian names.
Oh. Hmm.
Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, these are all Babylonian names. Why do we do that? Usually we try to be traditional.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, so according to the Torah, you're supposed to refer to it by numbers.
Right.
Right? So why do we refer to it? We don't do that, right? We all refer to it by Kislev. Oh.
Right.
So it's explained that when they came back from Babel to build the second base of Migdash, the few Jews who came back, they kept the names to remember that they were once in Gullus and now they're back in the land of Israel. To remember that there was a thing called Gullus and back in Israel. The Chassam Sofer writes, don't get scared. The Chassam Sofer writes that in the time of Beis HaMikdash, in the time of the third Beis HaMikdash, we're going to keep 2 days of Yom Tov. To remember that there once was a Gullus. It's not necessarily halachic. I mean, I think
be careful what you pray for.
Exactly. So the month of Bul is the Chodesh Hashmini that we call that Mar Cheshvan. So Bul was the Hebrew name. The real name for Cheshvan is, or a Hebrew name that was ascribed to it is Bul. Why? So either it's a language of Bala, which is worn out, because the trees and everything is becoming worn out. In the month of Cheshvan, that's autumn, that's fall.
Yeah.
The other idea might be that Bul is Milashon Mabul. Mabul, the our tradition is that the flood, Noach's flood, started in Cheshvan, ended in Cheshvan.
Huh.
And so that perhaps where it got. So this is the totality of Shlomo's building of the Beis HaMikdash, taking 7 years. Next parak we'll discuss Shlomo's palace and some of the other things that he built for the Beis HaMikdash. Well, and it's not until Perek Ches that we get to the dedication of this beautiful Beis HaMikdash. So Bez Hashem, we will continue next time.
That gold on top of wood may be what we used to do as kids and trace.